Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. This episode, we give you a rundown of the new DLC content for Fallout 4 and what it takes to bend hardline tubing. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. Astute listeners of the Hardware Asylum Podcast will have noticed that last month, Darren was gone.
Yes.
He was off in middle South America place somewhere, Costa whatever.
That's right. I was in Costa Rica at Playa Conchal, which is a beautiful part of the world. I'm really jealous of the folks that live there. But it was hot.
It was hot. Well, you know, it's close to the equator, so I am not surprised it was hot.
So beautiful, though. I really am jealous of folks that live where they can wear shorts all year round and have that kind of beauty around them in the beach. I miss the beach here in Idaho a lot.
Yeah, well, the beach is kind of like, yeah. We don't talk about the beach here in Idaho.
That's right.
But while Darren was gone, obviously Warren filled in for him. And when you got back, I noticed that you were not online all that much.
Yeah, and you know, I guess that's sort of a sore subject. Folks probably are aware that I am a network admin, or rather a server admin for my clan in Battlefield 4, one of many. But I, of course, play an awful lot of Battlefield 4. My wife would say too much, probably. But something came out in March, Dennis.
Oh, really?
Really.
Was it a game?
It was a game.
Was it Skyrim 2.0?
No, but it might as well be. In a similar vein, Fallout 4 had their first DLC package come out called Automatron. Dun, dun, dun.
Is that about robots?
Robots, robots, and more robots, as they like to say.
Woohoo!
So I want to talk about that, and I want to be spoilerific. So if you haven't picked this up and are planning on it, I'm going to spoil large chunks of it right now.
I'm not going to say turn off the podcast, but maybe go play it and then come back. But yeah, you should just listen.
So I won't make it not fun because I don't know that that's possible. But I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the missions, the length, and some of the stuff that's added on and how it works, because I really am pretty excited about it. And I should point out that it isn't like the Fallout 3 content. There wasn't as much meat as far as adventuring and quests as I expected, but it makes up for that in some other, I think, really admirable ways.
Okay.
So first of all, you get the Fallout 4 downloadable content in two different ways. One is you buy the season pass, and the season pass was $29.99.
$30.
$30. But thanks to the announcement of all of the Fallout 4 DLC, Bethesda has decided that they would like to up the price of their DLC to a whopping $49.99. $50.
$50.
And if you're outside of the United States, you might pay more.
Oh, burn, burn. So do you suppose they're taking like a Dying Light page out of their book?
I'm afraid, Dennis, that's a good point, that this seems to be a new model, that they release the season pass, then they come back and they up it periodically based on the content.
Kind of like getting the early adopters.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that it isn't punishing the early adopters, which used to be the case, because you'd buy a game for $69.79, and then a month later it's on sale for $29, and you're like, oh no, I blew it. But in this case, it's a little bit different because they're adding more content, they're charging you more, and their justification is that the content is bigger now than it used to be, and more of it's coming, and it's more free. Now, one of the things I want to tell you that's not spoilerific, if you stuck with us, is you can still get the season pass from third-party sites for that 29 or number or less while they last. So you definitely, if you're playing Fallout 4 and you don't have the season pass, while you're listening to this, go out, do a quick Google search and buy it, because you need to. Each one of these individual DLCs is going to run up to $10, maybe $15 a pop. Mm-hmm. And we know already of about three of them. So Automatron is the first. It was released March 1st. April, dun, 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 Wasteland Workshop comes out. And we'll talk a little bit about that and speculate. We know kind of what that is. And then the third one, which is going to be the really big one, is called Far Harbor, and it's coming in May. So they're just boom, boom, boom.
Is there even water in Fallout?
There is. In fact, there's a lot of it. And one of the fun things about that is what's in the water. But we'll come back.
All right.
You're getting ahead. Let's talk about Automatron, because it's out now. And unlike a lot of games, I beat it fairly quickly because I was very excited about it.
It wasn't because it was short. It was just you were excited and you dedicated time.
Yeah, some of it was short, but like the latest Star Wars movie, I wanted to make sure that I got through it before someone ruined it for me.
Oh, yeah, the guard of, like, well, and, okay, yeah, Reddit had this, like, no spoilers for Star Wars.
And
it's like, I think if people had spoiled it, kind of, it wouldn't have been as popular as it was, but, you know, whatever.
Maybe true. So Automatron, again, about robots. So you download the content, add it into your game, and it activates a new quest almost immediately, and I'm going to be vague on these things so that you don't have the little details ruined, but you get a distress call, you go and you try to save a group that's being attacked by robots. And of course, you're going to be successful, hopefully, and you will save the last robot. In my game, the last robot identified herself as Ada, ADA. I don't know if that's a randomly generated, but most likely that's the name. Mm-hmm. And she will attach herself to you as a NPC if you'd like.
Oh, cool.
So think of like a security bot, one of the walking robots that's already existing. You will have one of those as your friend. Now, that also gives you the opportunity to loot these robots for new pieces, parts, and there are a lot of them.
So it's kind of like in Terminator where, you know, you take out all the Terminators except one, you reprogram that one, you send it back in time, and then if you need parts, you can get those off of all the
devs. Yeah, it's exactly not like that.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
But sort of. Anyway, so the Automatron downloadable content not only gives you new robot enemies in packs, there's a new raider, which is the bad guys group called the Rust Devils, that use robots in their gear. So they use robot armor. They have robot NPCs that travel with them that are much stronger than your standard raiders. Mm-hmm. A lot of the robots will self-destruct when they die, like a mini nuke, just a word of warning. It took a couple of tries for me to figure that out because you'll go up to raid them and it's almost like they know. It survives just long enough for you to click on your inventory and then boom.
Yeah. COD 4 had that. That was annoying.
Not only do you get new armor elements that are robotic themed, like you can get a helmet that looks like an iBot, for example, which is one of the little floating mini robots in the game. But you have the ability to very quickly build a robot workbench where you can build your own robots and upgrade the robots that you have. And this introduces a lot of really interesting gameplay mechanics. A great example of that is if you're like me, you kind of have trouble ignoring the whiny settlements that need your help defending them, or they need more food or more beds, or you're kind of always whining about something and you have to waste your hard-earned points on, you know, charisma and leadership skills instead of good gun skills if you want to keep them happy, and all that kind of, you know, makes the game a lot more interesting. But gosh, they always want you to come and defend them. So I would build a robot, put a flamethrower on it, and send it to that settlement to help defend. Now, it counts as a settlement person, but they don't need a bed. They don't need food. They're stronger. They have more armor. When they die, you just loot them for parts. So you can build these robots as long as you have the resources to do so, which takes us to the missions. Now, I will tell you that the main quest missions for this, and there are no optional quests that I've recognized as being specific to Automatron, I completed the entire process in just over 4 hours, and that was meandering. Like, I didn't rush through it.
Oh, so it's relatively short, but you get a lot of gameplay out of it.
Yeah, well, 4 hours is pretty good for $10, and then you've got all this content that you can take with you elsewhere. You got the new factions that will attack you, and they're stronger and more versatile, so you're going to have a lot higher instance of NPC attacks, especially on your settlements from these Rust Devils and their robots. So you will find that you're being attacked stronger, of course, depending on what difficulty level you're playing, by these larger robot-enhanced groups. But the side effects of that is you're going to get all this cool new gear or weapons. You're going to be able to update your robots. So anyway, back to the quest. It's going to add, I think it's 4 separate main quest items. Your robot companion, Ada in my case, needs help in shutting down the bad guy, who's the mysterious mechanist Now, if you played far enough into Fallout, you may have seen mechanist-themed things in the game even before this came out, which was nice foreshadowing, especially if you're doing the Silver Shroud portion of the game. So that's going to maybe hint you into what's going on, but the mechanist is a rival. He is building robots, sending them out into the wasteland, and it looks like his intention is to kill all the people. But it turns out, or does it, that he is not what it seems. So you're going to need to track down the mechanist. And so each one of these missions is a mission to go find a certain item that will help you to narrow down the location of the mechanist's lair. So what it's going to do is it's going to reskin some of the areas that you may have already explored. I know two of the three I had already cleared out, one of them repeatedly. And it adds these new robot-themed areas. So it's going to give you some replayability in some areas you may have already explored. Two of them are relatively small. One of them is very large.
Okay.
So all this is going to happen. You're going to track it down. In the meanwhile, you'll be picking up more parts and upgrading your robot friend, which I kept with me for the duration of the mission. Mm-hmm. You reach the grand finale dungeon, if that's the right term. And sure enough, it ends up with a showdown with the mechanist and the mechanist's horde of evil minions.
Oh.
And you fight them.
That sounds dangerous.
Or don't fight them, depending on what choices you made.
So how do you not fight them, though?
Well, that's very spoilerific, but essentially, it's much harder to do, but you can get into the mechanist's lair and get access to the mechanist through a back door, maybe, is not too spoilish.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like you can go in the front door and get blown up, or you can sneak in and get to the objective and then
fight your way through, or if you're clever enough, there's another way to get to him.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is that Skyrim had a very similar mechanic to its DLC.
Uh-huh.
And some of the missions you could sneak in. Well, you could choose to go in, like, kill everybody. You could sneak around. And so that sort of gameplay really makes a lot of sense. And also makes a sense of why you could kill them or not.
Well, a lot of folks have complained that Fallout 4 has taken away some of the freedom that you had in Fallout 3. And to some extent, I would agree that Fallout 3 gave you a lot more options. And in fact, we talked about this a little bit offline, that there's a really fantastic set of articles and a walkthrough of videos from a guy who managed to beat Fallout 4 without killing anybody, which is honestly almost impossible. I would have thought it was impossible.
Yeah.
And Fallout 3 gave you, there was always another option. Either you could be sneaky, if you had high enough charisma, you could talk them into it. You could get rival factions to fight each other so you didn't have to. Well, some of that exists in Fallout 4 also, but it's nearly impossible to not treat it as a quest line combat-driven game where a lot of the missions require you to go in and kill, insert X here.
Right. Well, and especially if you have the new lightning chain gun.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to let that off the chain and kind of like mow down some enemies, mm-hmm. right?
There are some cool new weapons. I'm glad you mentioned that. And there's a lot of new gear also. So it's not just about robotic parts. There's some new special weapons. Of course, there's some new legendary enemies that are going to be out there also. Now, that being said, again, about 4 hours worth of gameplay. Mm-hmm. Very fun. You encounter a couple of different robot NPCs and, of course, the mechanist, rather, and his crew as well. So $10 worth of value for me. The quest line, sketchy, 4 hours for $10. Yeah, that's probably okay. Uh-huh. But the ability to take all this extra content into the rest of your game is what tips the scale for me on this.
Right, right.
Now, of course, I am a season pass holder, which has always proven with Bethesda games to be worth the money.
Yes.
And with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about the next two. Now, we're very close, as this is being recorded, to the release of April's expansion, which is called The Wasteland Workshop.
Yeah. This kind of makes sense because I believe in Fallout 4, you have the ability to build shelters and towns, and you can build like an entire community, right?
Yes, you can.
So I'm assuming that The Wasteland Workshop is probably adding to that mechanic.
Right. Now, at this point, I should remind folks that I play Fallout and Skyrim and all of the Bethesda games on my PlayStation 4.
Okay.
I see some shocked faces out there, or at least I can envision them.
PC Master Ratio.
Yes, but there's a good reason for that, and that is because I find that I spend so much time in the Fallout universe, or the Skyrim universe, or whatever, that I can get more comfortable in a lounge chair with a beer or whatever.
Mm. Yep.
And also that Fallout 4, because of the VAT system, which we've talked about before, is very controller-friendly. That being, you can use the VATs to help you aim, give you more information about your enemies, so the run and gun is reduced as opposed to, you know, Battlefield 4 or COD-style game.
Yep.
Now, that being said, you can play Fallout 4 without using VATs in that way, and it's a very competent shooter, which is maybe the first time that I've ever been able to say that about a Bethesda game. So there's hope.
Yeah, and I've watched a couple of people play Fallout 4 on Twitch, for instance, and they use the VATs and make use of, like, different little headshots and stuff like that. But then when they had four or five enemies come in after them, because time doesn't stop like it did before, they would do the run and gun thing and then just kind of, they would use up a lot more bullets that way. But
there are a lot of great videos about builds out there, and a lot of them are based around how to maximize your action points so that you can use VATs more effectively, because you can't stop time and make the decision, what my wife used to call cheat mode.
Yeah.
So
I got to go pee.
Anyway, let's go back to Wasteland Workshop. So, of course, this isn't out, but what we do know about it is a cheaper DLC because it is adding primarily settlement-based stuff. Now, the street price for this is going to be $4.99, of course, U.S. So this is not the one that is going to make or break the season pass. But what it does is it allows you to design and set up arenas, and capture creatures and get them to face off in battle. And who doesn't love a good arena fight plugin? If you do any Fallout 4 searches on YouTube or whatever, you're going to find folks, PC folks primarily, and that's why I mentioned it, that are already doing this, because you can spawn enemies into the game. They'll aggro each other and they'll fight. So it's not uncommon to see people doing, oh, let's do Brotherhood of Steel versus Deathclaws, 50 of each, and see who wins. And those videos are all over the place. I can't say that that's what inspired this, but it sure seems to. But it's going to allow you to add lots more stuff to your settlements. We're looking at the list here. It says Nixie Tube Lighting, Letter Kits, Taxidermy, and more. But the primary function of this is to build arenas where you can watch them fight each other. I'm assuming that you can run it as a business like you do the stores that you build in your settlements. Mm-hmm. Or you can use it as an arena where you can go in and fight enemies directly. So no more wandering around looking for enemies to fight. You'll be able to bring them to you, assuming you have the skills and the experience to build that.
Yeah, I wonder if you get experience off of that as well, because that would be kind of a experience farms, if you will.
Yeah, I see this as more of an in-game plug-in. All right, you're getting kind of bored, so we're going to let you control the action and be the game maker a la Hunger Games, right?
Yeah. Adds more replayability to that game.
Absolutely. So lastly, the third piece of content that's coming out in May, so 3 months in a row, good job Bethesda, is called Far Harbor, and it's only just been recently announced. And this one is the big meaty one, folks. It's going to have a street price that is the same, almost the same, $24.99 US, so about the same as the season pass if you're looking for it today. No brainer. And what it does is it brings a whole bunch of ocean sea stuff. Now, if you've played Fallout 4, you know that there is a lot of water. And
I didn't know that. Really.
Well, now you do.
Now I do.
There's a lot of water, and there are a couple of intriguing things in the game that have had us speculating for a long time about the water. One is a skill that makes it so you can breathe water.
You become a fish.
No more drowning.
Yeah.
And another one, that makes it so that irradiated water does not hurt you, which basically means that you can adventure underwater without any minimal or damaging activities. Now, you can also get around that with, like, the hazmat suits and the battle armor have oxygen benefits to them, so you can be underwater a lot longer.
So it's kind of be like BioShock.
Yeah, sort of. And in fact, that may be...
Well, it says here, you travel off the coast of Maine to a mysterious island of Far Harbor.
And this is where the money goes, Dennis, because Far Harbor, they say, is going to be a whole new world that may be...
Like real?
Yeah. Well, we could just, you know, turn out the podcast and go there now, right? No, but they say that the whole area is going to be a new world with new scenery. It's going to be lush, and coastal is sort of the pictures that they leaked kind of remind me of the Oregon coast, mm-hmm. or even sections of Hawaii. So lush, greener, new enemies.
You know, you never
the whole shebang.
You never think of green in Maine. You always think of like some cloudy Seattle area.
Well, that may be true, but Maine's also famous for its fall colors, right?
Yeah, the leafers.
So one of the things that has got me excited about it is this whole, well, they're going to do something with the water after all. Do yourself a favor, if you're a Fallout geek and you have time, Google the Fallout 4 videos of the folks that have mapped underwater, because there's already some really cool stuff you can discover underwater, but most of it is Easter eggy. There's not secret dungeons or whatever that are, well, in my opinion, worth the effort.
Loot caves.
Unless you want to see cat pictures on a boat or something. But what Bethesda's done is they've put just enough down there to keep you interested, and this is probably going to be a reskin of all the underwater areas with a bunch of new underwater bad guys. And the whole new area is basically going to be a new world. I'm reminded a little bit of the DLC for Dying Light, in that you'll be able to go to this new area, mm-hmm. and it will exist as a self-contained, mostly self-contained world that's very different from the Fallout 4 environment that we're in today.
Yeah. Well, the Dying Light one was like another part of the game. So you would leave your main game quest line, whatever, and go to the new one. So that sounds interesting. I kind of like that.
Very exciting. And, of course, boats and nautical stuff will have, I'm sure, new factions, new creatures. But I'm most excited about a whole new area to explore that's going to dramatically increase the amount of time that you spend in the Fallout universe. So I hope that I've done a good job of selling you on the Fallout 4 DLC and maybe got you interested enough that you'll run right out and get that season pass. And if you don't have Fallout 4 already, go watch some videos. This is, without a doubt, my favorite game world, my favorite game system, and I come back to it over and over again for hundreds of hours of play, and it's not so twitchy. Dennis, I know we've been on a bit of a water cooling kick lately here.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about water cooling. It's something that I did maybe 8-10 years ago. I was really big into it and then kind of got out of it to do the overclocking stuff.
Right.
And now I'm kind of getting back into it. You know, we have kind of a lull in overclocking, and at least in terms of performance increases. So, and, you know, water cooling and case modding is really making a big comeback.
Well, I absolutely agree. And not only because it helps with performance, but I think enthusiasts in general are looking for those little ways that they can differentiate their system and push it just that extra notch. I've noticed that that's true also in the custom case builds, as we're seeing a real resurgence of custom water cooling and lights and colored fluids. Mm-hmm. But I saw from the Facebook, the Hardware Asylum Facebook, that you got a new toy and you've been actually messing. I thought I'd give you an opportunity to talk to us about it.
Okay, yeah. So the picture that you saw, I'm assuming, is the Wagner heat gun that I bought.
That's right. Although I have to admit that I had to look close to see what it was, because it's kind of could be a drill, could be a hairdryer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one person said it's an AMD video card, and it probably puts out about that much heat.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, last episode or a couple episodes ago, we talked about why you would want to water cool your PC. We talked about the different ways of water cooling. One of them was hardline tubing.
So what is hardline? It's not just a Battlefield mod.
No, it's
disguised as a real game.
No, it's not a Battlefield mod. So in the early days of water cooling, you would use basically like silicone or Tygon was a brand name, but you'd use this soft tubing that you could get at like Lowe's, or you could buy it from a specialty shop.
Fancy fish tank tube, right?
Yeah, basically. And you would, depending on the wall thickness, would dictate like what kind of bends you could make and how far it would go and how much pressure would it handle. But that was all kind of, you know, just a way to get water from the pump and the res and the radiator to the CPU block and then back. With the hardline tubing, now you have the ability to direct the tubes wherever you want them to go. So if you want them to go horizontal from the front of the case to the back of the case, you can do that. Where if you had the soft line tubing, it would make a nice little arc, or it'd dip down, or you'd have to use like some zip ties to kind of hold it there.
Yeah, of course.
So it adds a bit of complexity to the build in terms of like, you know, what you have to do to put this stuff in, but it also really makes it look a lot nicer.
Well, it gives you the opportunity to shape it. I've seen some pretty clever stuff out there, and I know that it requires special tools.
Yeah. So the heat gun is a controlled way of putting heat into the plastics to soften it up, and mm-hmm. then you can bend it any way you want. You can do this with like plastic panels, for instance. So if you wanted to make a box, for instance, using like a quarter inch piece of acrylic, you take the heat gun, you heat up both sides of it in kind of a band where you want it to bend, and then you can fold it around a mold, for instance.
Now I'm holding one of your practice pieces, I guess is the right description. Mm-hmm. And this stuff is more durable, maybe thicker than I expect. Now, this is the first time I've held hard tubing, because I also came from the soft tubing world the last time I did it. Mm-hmm. And it's thick.
Well, this tubing here that you're holding is the metric equivalent. It's like 16 and 12 millimeter or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's the half inch inside diameter tubing in metric, whatever that is. And then it's got the 5/8 outside diameter.
Mm-hmm.
The wall thickness makes it relatively stiff. I mean, you can go ahead and try to bend it.
It's definitely very solid. In fact, I can see why you must have had a heat gun, because it doesn't even really flex.
No, and this is the PETG, which is supposedly a lot more impact resistant than acrylic tubing of the same size, shape, and diameter. Acrylic tubing was easy to get early on, and that's what people built their hardline systems out of, but it made it to the point where you couldn't transport the system, because if something broke loose inside there, it would break the tubing and water would go everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, a lot of guys say, oh, you have to drain it before you move it. And it's like, no, that's BS.
Oh my gosh, so much hassle. Scared everyone away.
Yeah. So with the PETG, it's less impact prone. So it's, you know, it's stiffer. And it's also food grade, I believe, so it's relatively safe. Although it does have some chemical reactive dependencies, like you can't put glycol alcohol in it, so antifreeze, for instance. But these days, people are buying these crazy opaque fluids and stuff with little pearlescent crap right in it, you know, to give your water cooling loop that extra little pizzazz.
Absolutely. And if you're going to spend the money, and believe me, you will if you want to do it right,
mm-hmm.
you want it to look like $1 million too.
Right. So right now you're holding a piece of tubing that I was doing some test bends on, you know, trying out the new gear, for instance. So I have several bends. So this first bend, I'm pointing in virtual space here. So this first bend I did, if you look at it, it looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. But the edges on the inside, they have these little bumps.
Oh, yeah, I see that.
And basically that is me not heating up enough of the tube to make it a nice smooth bend. So the idea is that you want to heat up, the area of the bend, then plus maybe like a quarter of an inch to give it a nice smooth edge.
Well, I guess we should take a picture of this and probably post it with the podcast, but in the event we don't, what I'm looking at is basically shaped like a question mark, if you can visualize it, where the round part of the question mark has been folded downward so that it is flat, perpendicular to the vertical pipe.
Yeah, so I wanted to experiment with doing more than one bend in different directions. So the first bend I made, I didn't heat up enough of it, so it made the inside corners a little bumpy, and the outside of it looks a little stretched. And then I did another bend that was pretty much 90 degrees in the other direction across the top. And that was a nice smooth bend. But what happened was I wanted to see if I could reshape it.
Right.
So I heated it up again. And what ended up happening was it started to go back to straight.
Oh, okay.
So if you look, there's it got kinked. So it's all kind of like skinny in one spot.
Oh,
and
yeah. Yeah.
So obviously that is something that when we go to bend these tubes for our mods, we don't do that. So if you need to rework it, you need to get the silicone cord, which we can talk about in a second, back into the tube and then heat it up, hold it in place, and then reshape it.
Okay, well, let's take a step back, because we're talking about the actual end result, but I think we should talk a little bit about the tools in general and the process of bending this for folks like me that haven't ever done hardline before.
Okay.
So you've got kind of a cool thermal take, tool kit. That's a mouthful for you.
Yeah. So thermal take was nice. And they sent me a bunch of stuff from their TT Premium online store, which is where they have a lot of their liquid cooling certified gear. You know, you can buy bending kits, you can buy tubing, you can buy coolant, water blocks, fittings, all sorts of stuff from there.
So what we're looking at here is the Pacific Hard Tube Bending Kit.
Yep.
Now, this one is specifically designed, it looks like, for this size tube, which makes sense, which is, like I said, the half-inch hard tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the mandrels are different diameters, and that's why it becomes a problem.
So what's a mandrel?
A mandrel is your little bending thing. So,
the
Hardline Bending Kit is a $70 product. It comes with a line cutter, a little shaper dealy bobber to cut down the burrs. It comes with three mandrels and then a silicone cord, which is the same outside diameter as the inside diameter of the tubing. So when you bend it, you put this cord through your PDG or acrylic tube, and that keeps it from collapsing.
Now, having this kit in front of me has actually kind of revealed maybe an insider secret. When I look at these really cool kits online, they have some really neat combinations of bends that I would have believed were very difficult. But the kit has 1, 2, 3, 4 different preset angles in it. It looks like 90 degrees, of course, the 90-degree bend, 180, which we talked about.
Yeah.
But we also have a 360.
Yeah, which is basically a full circle.
And then a 135, which is a very slight angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a 135, and then you also have the two that are not marked on the outside there.
Which look like they're maybe in between, like a 45 or so. So you have a lot of options. Mm-hmm. And now when I was looking at the kits, I saw a lot of S-curves and that sort of thing that, from the surface were very daunting looking. But I can see now how you can combine these thermal take tools to build those preset forms fairly quickly.
Right. Well, with any sort of tubing bending, like if you're going to bend metal tube, you can set up a jig so that you can always create the same S curve again.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that with this kind of tubing. You can build a jig, just have like some dowels and stuff, and then you kind of bend the tube around it so that you get the right shape that you're after. But if you use a bending kit like this, you have the mandrels and then you make the one bend and then you heat it up again and you make the next bend. So it's an iterative process, a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you might want to buy more individuals if you're going to set that up. Mm-hmm. But I see that you have a separate tool here that looks decidedly less high tech than the Thermaltake pre-built stuff.
Oh, yeah. So the same weekend that I got the heat gun, I was looking at the mandrels. I'm like, well, how am I going to secure these so that when I'm making my bends, the mandrel doesn't move? Because you need to put the tube in there until it cools down enough that it holds its shape. So I built this little bracket that secures itself to the mandrel. So if you look on the mandrel itself, there are two holes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So the first hole is the center of the bend, and the bottom hole is, it says something.
Like an anchor or something?
Yeah, tube mandrel, I don't know. There's another hole there. So what I built was this little jig that it's made out of square metal stock, and I basically drilled two holes through it, and then I enlarged one of them so that this screw that I threaded into it, so I tapped the top so it's threaded. So the screw that goes through here, the head of it fits through the big hole that I put in the bottom, so it goes all the way through. And then I got a nylon washer. You put a nylon washer on there, and then you put that through the two holes on the mandrel. It just kind of slides in there. And then you can put, at this point, it's secured in place.
Yeah, it looks pretty stable.
Yeah. I can mount that in my bench vise, and then I'll hold it there until I'm ready to move it. And if I need to swap from the 180 to the 90, I just pull this off and put the 90 on there.
Oh, no, very clever.
Yeah. And it's, otherwise, what I'd have to do is, basically get two big, long wood screws and screw that down to my workbench.
Oh, yeah. That would be definitely a simple way to do it if you don't have access to a little bit more advanced tools.
Yeah. I could have done that. I didn't want to put a bunch of holes in my bench.
Yeah. Well, and it keeps the Thermaltake kit looking pretty, and we're a little protective of our hardware around here for some reason.
Well, yeah. and I've seen a couple of people that have done similar, you know, not necessarily with like a Thermaltake bending kit, but they've made their own jigs with like dowels and stuff, and they just put it on a piece of like MDF or 2x4s and stuff like that, which works. Although with the mandrels, you get this nice smooth inside bend here, which keeps the inside of the tube looking really nice. And if you heat the tube up to the right width to make the bend, and then at the right temperature, and then bend, you know, pull it over the mandrel slowly enough, you cannot tell that it got bent. So like, for instance, this last bend on my little test piece, it's really smooth. There's no inside burring, you know. And that was one where I heated up a good, you know, 3 inches of the tube and bent it 180 around the mandrel and let it cool, and it turned out great.
Well, very nice. And that's why we practice, folks, because much like the measure twice, cut once, you don't want to go through the tube if you can avoid it, because every additional time you heat it up increases the risk that you're going to do some damage or create those burrs or, I guess, mess with the water flow, right? We want everything to move through at the same rate.
Yeah. Well, and that's what the silicone cord is for. It keeps the tube from collapsing when you heat it up. I've also noticed that it allows you to shape it by hand, too. You don't necessarily need to use the mandrel to bend the tube.
Oh, freehand it.
So you could freehand it. You can only make like one direction of a bend, but you could make a full circle or a hoop if you wanted. Takes a bit more practice, I believe, because at that point, part of it's going to cool down and you might, you know, freehanding it is a little bit dangerous, but it can be done. And with this PETG that's relatively stiff, it didn't take very long for it to cool down. And then at that point, it became permanent. So,
well, very nice. Lots of practice before we get to building a full system.
Yeah, and I'm almost going to say that we'll probably do a video of bending the tube. So that would be a follow-up to our Hardware Asylum podcast where we talk about doing this stuff. But we can do like kind of a little how-to video on, you know, cutting it with the cutter that Thermaltake included, the deburring tool. So if you happen to get a little overzealous with the cutting tool, it squishes the plastic in the middle, and at that point you can't get the cord through there, so you use this little cutter to open up the hole.
Very clever. So real quick on the Thermaltake Pacific hard tube bending kit, initial thoughts,
it's a nice little tool. Obviously Thermaltake isn't the only company that provides a kit like this, but it comes with everything you really need. You have all these different mandrels that you can use to bend the tube. The thing that I was looking forward to most was the cutter and the silicone cord. Now, this cord is not very long, which might be the biggest downside to this. You know, it's basically a foot and a half, maybe a foot and three quarters in length. It's not very long. So if you have a long run that you're trying to bend, you might have to insert the tube on one side of your bend and then pull it out and push it into the other side. Whereas if it was a lot longer, it could go through the entire tube and then allow you to do the bends without having to remove it.
Well, I'm sure that you could buy this stuff individually if you needed to, right?
Yeah, you can.
Terrific.
Yeah, and the one thing I did notice, though, is that if you remove the cord and then you need to make another bend, it doesn't go back in there the same way that it came out. So you need to use a little bit of like soapy water or some silicone spray or something to give it a little bit of extra lubrication.
Perfect. So now that you've done some bends with the Thermaltake kit, any advice or lessons learned for folks that are first approaching bending tubes like this?
That's kind of hard to narrow down because trial and error is really the best teacher, I think. The one thing I did notice, though, is that the first time I did a bend, I didn't heat up enough of the tube. So, you know, you need to give it at least an inch past the bend that you want to make. Also, I didn't try to make any precision bends. So we have, for instance, when we go to install this in Darren's V51 custom case, we'll have to figure out exactly where we want to have a bend. And if we make a mark on there, that might not necessarily be the center of the bend. It might be where the bend starts.
Right.
So there'll be a little bit of trial and error of figuring out where to start these curves.
Mm-hmm. Well, much like any construction project, I can see that you're going to buy more tube than you think you're going to need, because it's going to be hard to tell how much you're going to need.
Right. And if you overestimate, like for instance, say we have a tube that needs to go from CPU block to the res, and they're at the same height, but we need to have one with a 90 degrees going straight away from you, and then another with a 90 degrees going straight up. Well, if you leave a little extra tubing there so that you can adjust the height.
Oh, yeah.
And then get it narrowed down, you're wasting a good, you know, maybe 3-4 inches of tubing, depending on how much extra you put in there. So you're definitely going to need to have extra tube available just so that you can make things fit.
Well, very cool. I'm looking forward to more on water cooling and the custom build that we're working on as we move forward in the future. So tune back in as we continue to talk about our water cooling project and the little specific parts, and keep an eye out for those how-to videos and articles as we progress through. We'll be sharing the things that we learned and passing on the tools that we used to you guys in hopes that you will follow along and be inspired to build your own custom hardline kit.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Google or like us on Facebook. This has been an Engine Lean production, copyright 2016. Thanks for listening.